people don't like it. I mean, it's, I don't really consider myself competition to the conventional side. We're supplying two different consumers, but I've had people pull in. I mean, people are pretty blunt about sometimes, you know, and then you get to always get the old, well, why do you have a sprayer? You can't have a sprayer. You know, you got your typical organic farmer, you probably spray at night, you know, this and that. So you always hear them kind of comments, but I don't know. It just kind of comes with the territory, but it works for me, and that's why we do it. It works for us, and we're going to keep doing it.
Ladies and gentlemen, farmers, ranchers, and distinguished guests, thank you for listening to the Farm for Profit podcast, where we discuss the latest ideas, methods, trends, and techniques available to help your farm achieve higher levels of farm profitability. The Farm for Profit podcast is co-hosted by Tanner Winterhoff, the Iowa Bankerman, and David Whitaker, the Iowa Land Guy, where in tandem, they will share their ideas and advice from industry experts. Thank you again for listening to the Farm for Profit podcast. Remember, if you aren't farming for profit, you won't be farming for long. And now, here's Tanner and David.
Hey, listeners, thanks again for listening to the Farm for Profit podcast. This is Tanner Winterhoff.
And this is David Whitaker.
Remember, this is the Profit Show. We're going to do a What's Working in Ag segment, hit you with a general topic, summarize it, and challenge you. That's a little bit different than last week where we did a Farm for Fun show, where the format was a little bit more loose that way. Dave?
You bet. We want to make sure that all our listeners get a thank you, and thanks for listening, and thanks for sharing this on all social media platforms. If you guys have anything that you want to for us to talk about on the podcast, make sure you email it in to farm4profit@gmail.com, and that's an LLC in there too. Forgot that, Tanner. Farm4Profit LLC, and we appreciate you helping us grow our audience. So today's Head of the Class listener reviews are brought to you by Gearinghoff. They're the head of the class, no matter what the crop. Premium harvest heads for all your harvesting needs. Our listener reviews are exactly what we need to fuel the energy each week, and Gearinghoff is exactly what you need to maximize your harvest each year. Tanner,
yeah,
what is our review?
Milking Cows 94. So that is Christopher Templeton out of Wisconsin. He says, Farm for Profit is great. We appreciate that. We appreciate all reviews. We're spoiled rotten here on this podcast to get a lot of those. So throw those out there. Hopefully we can get one of yours read while we do one of our shows. So let's jump right into our What's Working in Ag segment right now with Rocky Ormiston. Hey, welcome to the podcast.
Yeah, thanks, guys.
Why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself? What's your connection to agriculture? Where are you at?
We are in southwest Kansas, Kismet, Kansas, to be exact. I'm a third-generation farmer with my dad, Rock Ormiston. Our farm was established by my, well, actually fourth generation, I guess, my great-grandpa in 1906. And I'm living on the homestead spot, not the exact house, but one right next to where the original house was at. So we've been here a while, and mostly irrigated farming, corn, soybeans, alfalfa, and a little bit of dry land, but for the most part, all sprinklers.
Cool. So as we touch base with our farmers during this segment, we always like to kind of hear what you think has been either an advantage for your farm or something that's working out quite well. What can you think about there that our listeners might enjoy listening to?
Well, I'll tell you one thing that has really been an advantage over for us on our farm over the last 6 or 7 years that we've brought into our farm is cover crops. And I know that's a huge topic, and there's 1,000 different cover crops, but we just use rye, and we use maybe some species here and there, but rye has really helped with not just what happens below the ground, but above the ground. We're real sandy, so we, you know, Kansas likes to be a little windy here and there. Before the 6 or 7 years, we always had a tough time with our ground blowing. So after harvest, we get the cover crops in, and we haven't had ground blow in 6 or 7 years, I mean, since we started doing that. So what that has been a huge part of our farm to help with yield. And one thing that just kind of came with that cover crop was just what it does below the soil, which actually, you know, increases yield, and that's what we're here for, is ROI, I guess.
I think I've been a little bit sheltered, but I did not expect that to be your answer, and I didn't really think of cover crops playing a substantial role in Kansas.
Well, yeah, it was, at first it was like, God, you know, something else we got to do, and my dad was a really big part of it, and I just, you know, I kind of pushed, on it, just pushed back on it, I should say. And I'm glad he pushed harder, because it really did work out, and it has been a big part. But we also strip till, so we do a little no till, and so between, you know, those two or three things that we do, it's a big part of our farm and how we try to, you know, make the most profit while farming.
Nice. One thing that, since following you on social media, I found exciting, what I really want to know how you make it work, is you dominated a world record. Was that last year or was that 2019?
No, that was 2020. Yeah. Yeah. We, with the help of Klaus and the awesome Gearinghoff header that we run, the North Star. And yeah, we cut 71,000 bushel in 12 hours.
Oh, my.
Pretty impressive. Yeah. Ooh, we had a great team. And, you know, it all goes down to, from the girls making us lunch and dinner, to the person in the combine and the grain carts and the trucks, to the grain, you know, our grain bin facility. So yeah, it was a huge team effort. So the record wasn't broke by me. It was broke by Warmerson Farms.
That was your whole crop for the year? in 12 hours? Jeez, no.
Yeah. We cut a little over 1.2 million bushel with that combine.
Wow.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's impressive. I just can't, right now I'm just thinking about how you keep that fleet of trucks to keep the grain away. Well, yeah, let alone the grain carts, but just keeping the grain away from that combine.
You don't have a mother bin, do you?
No, but they, I think they were, after the record was broke, I did get a message from them, and they were pretty sad that they couldn't have been a part of it.
Oh, there you go, yeah.
So how does that even start? When do you decide, I am going to smash this record? Or how do you even look up what the record is?
Well, I when we first bought the Lexion, we had the 760, and one of my hired men that we're running, and he goes, I think we may have broke the record. This was in 19, and actually on the same ground that we broke it last year. And I'm like, really? And he goes, yeah, I mean, just on accident. You know, we were just cut. I mean, what we did for the world record, the only difference was between a normal day was I had another combine driver. So Nick Jacobson, he's territory guy for Klaus, good friend of mine. Him and I drove the combine. It never stopped.
Right.
Well, we had a couple of issues. We were down for maybe 30 minutes. But other than that, it never stopped. Even going to the bathroom, to eating lunch, to eating dinner, he got on while it was going forward, and I got off while I was going forward. So not maybe the best safety things that we had going on, but it worked. And so other than maybe stopping, that's kind of normal. So in 2019, we were on that same ground, and I called my grain bin guy that runs my scales, and I think we ended up cutting 66,000 or something like that.
Yeah,
really close to the record then. So
it had to be pretty decent yielding corn in order to really rack up those bushels, didn't it?
Yeah, it was anywhere from 270 to 280.
Yeah, I think that would help out.
Actually, there was one field went 270, and the next field went 280, and the field that went 280 had cover crop on it.
There you go. Proof's in the pudding right there.
And the other one didn't. So, yeah, that was – and very dark soil, you know, really, really good ground. And we were thinking, oh, you know, that – and that's kind of a thinking. It's like, oh, you only put cover crop on sand. You only put cover crop, you know, where it's going to blow. And we had a little extra. We're like, oh, let's just throw it over there and see how that does. I mean, these circles are – you know, and it's not a great side-by-side because it's two different fields. But they are really literally next to each other, and they are the same soil type. So, yeah, the whole farm is covered in rye right now.
Nice. So, very good. So how obviously we know the combine had to be running just fine, but how important was it to have a Gearinghoff head on the front of that machine for accomplishing that?
Oh, it wouldn't have been possible without the Gearinghoff. I mean, it started the record. The Lexion finished it, I guess. So it was a huge part of the record. And really, when I bought that Gearinghoff in 19, I was a little leery because there's no one around here has one. I mean, the area is predominantly John Deere. I mean, when I say predominantly, about 99.9% John Deere, right, in our area. And talked to a couple people. Oh, I love it. And I did. They're easy to work on, simple. It's a great head. And it's a little lighter. than the John Deere was. And I think Lexion's head, it's a little lighter than Lexion. But yeah, I really have nothing bad to say about the Gehringhoff. I mean, it's just, it's done as well. And I can't bash someone for a world record either. So
there you go.
Nice to be a part of that.
They're a part of it just as much as Klaus was. Yeah. So.
Fantastic. Well, Rocky, we really appreciate you taking some time here on your Father's Day to chat with us about this.
Yeah.
We know you've got places to go and people to see and kids to hang out with, so we appreciate that. Thank you for jumping in here and for being a fan of the podcast. We hope you have a good one.
Yeah, you guys have a good Father's Day, and we'll talk to you later.
Awesome. We thank you so much. All right, that was another great What's Working in Ag segment. We hadn't touched base there for a little while. We also, listeners, don't want you to forget about Ag Leader. We thank them for their support of this podcast. Remember that they have a solution for every season. Their products and solutions help integrate your entire farm all year round. Use their products to seamlessly connect your equipment and tasks so that way your operation runs smooth and efficiently, even more than it did before, Dave.
Such a great sponsor there. Appreciate Ag Leader. Tanner, let's get to our main topic, organic farming. Is it a necessary part of the future of farming?
Yeah, and I really am excited to kind of explore the profitability of this too. It's one of those that we've had a couple of different ways listeners have suggested we cover this topic, but we're extremely fortunate to have Adam Bissell on the line with us today. Adam, correct me if I'm wrong, but you are the owner of Pleasant Valley Organics in St. Louis, Michigan. We're not talking Missouri, we're talking Michigan here. Together with him and his family, they farm over 2,500 acres of organic crops in the central part of the state. Your pinned tweet says, "The demand in your local market for organic crops has helped you, but you are also aware that the need for GMOs is necessary to help feed this growing world population." What do you think? Is that about right?
Sounds about right. Yes, it's that hits the nail right on the head, I feel like.
So, Adam, tell me a little bit about your tie to agriculture. Where we know that you're in the organic field and you farm, but what's a little background?
Well, grew up farming. My dad's farmed his whole life, and I've just grown up around it. As I got older, I got out of high school. There just wasn't really enough for me to stick around the farm, so I drove semi, started my own trucking company. And then here in the past 5 years, 6 years, my brother and I started Pleasant Valley Organics, and we helped Dad with his farm also. We own Pleasant Valley Organics ourselves, my brother and I, and then we helped Dad with his farm. In a combination of between my dad and myself and my brother and my two uncles, we're farming about 3,600 acres right now.
All right.
So, and it's all organic with the exception of about 220, 230 acres, somewhere in that area. So that's in transition yet. So yeah, I've been farming my whole life for quite a while.
So what type of crops do you grow?
We're raising just regular field corn for feed grade, soybeans. We raise a little bit of butternut squash, and then we raise a lot of dry beans, black beans, pinto beans, light red kidney beans. We raise quite a few dry beans.
So when you said just a few squash, how many acres of squash are we talking?
We've raised up around 140 acres, but now right now we're about just down around 40 acres. What we have a contract for them to raise, and that varies by the year. It might go up next year, it might go down. It's just kind of as they need it, or however many acres they need raised produced.
So is that a pretty standard year for you guys, or has there been other crops that you've played around with in the past?
Yeah, we've played around with we've raised sweet corn 1 year for a guy, and played with the fresh produce market. They were in big chain stores, Trader Joe's, Meijer's. I think they went to Costco. So we did that. We've raised peas. We've raised green beans. So we've raised a little bit of everything. When we're conventional, we raise sugar beets and stuff like that. So we've raised a little bit of everything.
So why wouldn't you be trying sugar beets on the organic side? Is there a difference in how they react?
Well, there just is no market for it.
Ah.
So there's no market there. And with where we are, we got a cool climate right here with the lakes, being in Michigan with the lakes and stuff. And beets, they can bring on disease and stuff. So they use, you know, they got to use quite a bit of fungicide on them. So that wouldn't really, I don't know how you'd really farm them organically, I guess, to a point. But yeah, just, there's no market for it around here like that.
So help some of our listeners that might not know the full operation of organic. So when I think organic, I think no added chemicals, no added pesticides, herbicides. What, help me understand some more about it.
Yeah, so we have a certifier, and if we want, they do make things that you can use. There's you can spread sulfated potash. You can use limes, and you can use certain, there's insecticides that you are allowed to use. They're organic approved. You have to check with your certifier and make sure that you get the okay for them. You need to have soil samples saying that you need this. You can't just go out and throw it out there. As far as like the sulfated potash or something like that. So they demand a lot of soil sampling to back up all that kind of stuff. And then just the insecticide, you know, we use some, there's some things we can use on our dry beans. Like I said, you gotta get that approved. And then there's some foliar feeds that we can use also. As far as a herbicide, just a good old cultivator and a hand hoe and rotary hoe, that's about all you got for that. So
nice. And that's kind of, when we talked here before starting to hit record, that's what you mentioned you're out there doing today, right? Running a rotary hoe through your beans?
Yep, rotary hoeing some beans. We got some rain coming, it looks like tonight, 7/10 or so. So trying to get some weeds taken care of that. If it's going to be 4 or 5 days before I can get out here, it's going to be too far gone. So I'd have to start cultivating. So I'm just trying to get them slowed down or get them killed off and buy myself some time here.
That was crazy. You knew that you had 7/10 of rain just coming your way tonight, or are you just predicting that there's 7/10 of rain coming tonight?
That's what the weatherman said. So that right now, that could be an inch or it could be nothing. I don't know. We've been getting...
And you have more specific weatherman than we have, I can tell you that.
Well, I wish I could share some rain with some other people. I got beans to plant yet, and it's we keep getting rain right at the wrong time. So we went from 2 dry to 2 wet in about 45 minutes. We got just pounded with rain here about a week ago. So I'd take a couple rains off if I could.
No, I get that. It's been different all around the country. It's been kind of fun to listen to our listeners about what they're experiencing. Some could use it really bad, and some are telling it to go away. Just too bad we can't share it and spread it all the way around. So
absolutely,
Adam, with the way you guys are operating there, you mentioned, like I said during your introduction, that you have a local market for this. Who are the end users of your crops?
So our corn goes to a large poultry farm, chicken farm. So we market all of our corn to them. They take it all. In return, we buy our manure from them for fertilizer. So we got a great working relationship with them. Our beans, they go to another place about 60 miles east of us, and they process them, they clean them, and they go to canners. The dry beans will go to a canner, and I believe all the soybeans end up over to Japan, China, somewhere over there in Asia. So, yeah, as far as I know, that's where all the soybeans go. But, yeah, the dry beans, everything's within 60 miles east or west of us. So,
how important is that if I'm going to start organic, that I have an outlet?
Oh, it's very important. I mean, I think that's a pretty big piece of the puzzle. I mean, there's a premium here, but if I had to haul it to Illinois, or if I had to haul it down into Indiana, or it wouldn't be as so... I wouldn't be so interested in doing it. You know, that's a lot of extra trucking you'd have on it and freight. And so when we looked at it, we thought, well, it doesn't really get better than this. You know, we got our end users are right here close. I mean, so it worked out. It worked out good for us. We're pretty fortunate.
So if we go back to the beginning, when you were deciding to make that switch from conventional to organic, what were some things that you took into consideration that our listeners might find valuable if they're thinking about making the same switch?
Well, when we started talking about the switch, Dad had actually had a friend of ours approach him probably 20 years ago and said, you know, I think this is something you guys should do. And Dad's, you know, no way. I mean, how would I ever handle the weeds or manage the weeds? And So you guys would do just fine. We were just kind of scared. Dad was kind of worried about taking that on. And when the opportunity presented itself again, we said, well, you know, I was wanting to get back on the farm full time and get working. And they just was going to give me an opportunity to farm with my brother and alongside Dad. We also weren't going to, where we are, land is not always up for grabs. We got a lot of big dairy in our area. There's a lot of established farmers, multi-generation farmers. And we thought, well, you know, if we're ever going to be able to compete with anybody, maybe we're going to have to find something we can make a little more per acre on our own ground. And then if the opportunity presents itself and we can grow, we can do that. So it was just kind of one of those deals that just fit our operation and what we wanted to do and make a little more per acre on what we already had rather than trying to fight for every acre or try to farm 10,000 acres to make a living. So we just kept steadily growing here the last 6-7 years, and that's where we're at now.
So we get these words and acronyms thrown around like GMO and GMO survivor and non-GMO and
so far he's using the same acronym three times.
Herbicide free and pesticide free and or you go to the meat counter and it's, you know, no hormones used, etc. What is the difference between conventional and organic? Now, are we like flamethrowers and cultivators and like, it's just like we were saying earlier, no added chemicals, but you say there are some that we can put on.
Yeah, I mean, there's just different, I mean, insecticides, I guess, the insecticide on... And on how it breaks down, for example, you know, you got some conventional sprays, you know, you go out, you spray, it hits the bug and it kills the bug. Some of the stuff I use, you spray it and the bug eats on the plant for a couple more days and then the bug dies off. Well, they can still do a lot of damage in them couple of days. But, you know, as far as the difference, I mean, there is quite a bit of difference on how it's done, what you can use. Like I said, you gotta really check with your certifier and see what's okay and approved and what's not approved. So
I'm guessing you can make more money at it though, or you wouldn't be doing it.
I mean, obviously the premium, that's what draws the interest of everybody. That's what, you know, everyone's going to, they're not going to make the transition if they're not going to make the money. Right now, if you look at our market, it's not that appealing if you look at our market compared to the conventional market. The corn is about neck and neck. So everyone's kind of like, well, are you guys going to switch back? And I'm like, no, I'm going to stay here because we all know whatever goes up must come down and vice versa. So and financially, just it's too hard to switch, you know, back and forth. That transition's terrible financially. It's real hard. So,
and you were already running your operation at what you consider to be a profitable level. Now, you know, like I said, the premium in years past, as we record this in 2021, looked a lot better compared to the price run up that we've had. But that doesn't mean that your farm is losing money, or you're projecting that you're going to lose money this year. Correct?
Correct. Yeah. I mean, we're still projected to do just fine. As long as we have Mother Nature on our side, I mean, our stuff's all contracted. We're right where we want to be. But, yeah, I mean, when we decided to make the switch, we were doing fine. Dad was, you know, we're farming and making a living at it. We just thought it might bring more opportunity to switch. So, and it has. We've grown. We've been able to do some different things. So, I mean, the profitability per acre and to just do more on less acres was what we really liked, and that's really worked for us.
So now, as we're got listeners that have considered or maybe looked into switching in the past, it's my understanding that you have to go 3 years from the use of one of these. What if that's true? What is helpful to making that transition? Are you planting alfalfa and letting that go, or what types of techniques do you use to transfer from conventional to organic?
When we first started, we had a small transition market for dry beans, black beans, and pinto beans, and that went away. So then we were like, well, we had quite a bit of ground to transition yet, so we were just using non-GMO soybeans getting that $1.50 premium, taking care of them, you know, just with just the cultivators and tying weeders and stuff, doing it all the organic way. And that's the hard part. You know, you're doing everything in this organic way and you're not getting the premium or the kickback, you know, that to, for all the work. And it gets financially, it gets very tough. And there were days I didn't know if we made the right decision or not, but we pushed through and got through it. But yeah, it's 3 years from your last spray date is the transition. So your last day of your chemical or your commercial fertilizer or spray on your conventional side, three years from that day, you're organic. So I know people who have used hay, you know, they plant hay and do that and it's worked for them, but we just, I had to have a bean or something like that just because I knew I could sell them and I could do it, you know, didn't know if, where to go with all the hay and stuff like that. So
how much more passes across the field do you use versus transition? How many, I'm thinking diesel cost here is what I'm thinking.
I mean, yeah, I'm doing probably three passes, you know, with the cultivator. I'm doing one pass with a rotary hoe, one pass with a tine weeder. So there's five passes. Doing everything at 60 foot now, with the exception of two cultivators. They're at 30 foot. But, I mean, I don't have the numbers right in front of me, but we're really not burning that much fuel. The tractors aren't wide open. They just idle along, and really you can do a couple hundred, 300 acres on a tank of fuel. So it's not like we're, you know, that's something a lot of people say, well, you're burning a lot more fuel, you're doing a lot more passes. Yeah, I'm doing some more passes than normal, but we're not burning a ton of more fuel. I mean, it's not an outrageous number, so...
Well, that's better than I thought. You know, I didn't even think about the idling down. If you've got the right amount of horsepower out front of these tools, it's a lot different than running that 1066 or that 4020 on the front of a cultivator. So that makes a lot more sense. Have you guys worked with any cover crops as part of your process for organic?
Yeah, I'm using a little bit of rye. We've done a little rye, throwing a little wheat out there, experimenting with that, just getting to learn that. That's kind of a whole different animal too, because if you get a wet spring, when you know there ain't no other way to kill that other than with a tillage tool, so you get a wet spring and you let that get away from you, that's, you can be kind of a world of hurt in a quick hurry, especially if you get some rye that gets way too ahead of you. So you got to get that work down, and that's where you could get a couple extra passes with the field cultivator and that you don't want to put out there. So trying to, timing's everything with this, like, you know, like I said, I'm out here trying to get some done just to get ahead of this rain that's coming. So timing is everything with this. So no matter how many passes you got to make.
So when we're looking at the profitability of this, because obviously that's the biggest focus of our podcast, we talked how you can get a premium on the product to sell as long as you've got a market. And obviously that premium is going to fluctuate. What about the inputs? Is organic seed more expensive than conventional? Or are you looking at, like you said, some of these insecticides that you can spray, what about on the input side? Are those inflated or pretty much the same parallel?
The seed isn't as expensive as a conventional seed, because you're not getting all the traits, you're not getting the treatment on the seed. Where I see our expenses is the manure. We put, you know, we don't short ourselves on manure, just in case, you know, you want to make sure you have enough nitrogen out there. So that there would probably be our biggest expense. We've just recently started weed burning. So, you know, you start talking there, which if you run the weed burner, which you're burning propane, 30 foot wide tool bar, gas is, propane's about $1.05 a gallon right now. You start putting 10, 15 gallon to acre on, you know, there's some expense. But if you do that, you might get rid of one cultivating, or you get one pass with the cultivator, or might not have to send a crew of hired hands through the field to hoe with a regular, you know, hand hoe. So there is expenses and different fields, you know, I mean, they're not outrageous. They're not nothing too crazy. We kind of always compare, you know, if we fit a field two times, you know, with a field cultivator in spring, trying to get rid of some weeds before we can plant it, were probably about the same as what it'd be for like changing the teeth. You know, it's still cheaper than probably spraying some Roundup out there or whatever people are using now. So
right.
You just kind of got to look at it a couple different ways. And, you know,
have you looked into any of the new technology where there's robots that will eventually go out and kill the weeds in the field? Do you think that if we get to that level of technology that a lot more people will go to organic?
I don't know. That's a good question. I mean, yeah, it'd be cool to see that kind of technology come along. But the thing with organic is, I mean, it's such a, you got to really want to do this. I mean, the premium's there, but if your heart's not in it and you don't really want to do it, you're probably not going to do the best job at it. And not saying I'm the best at it. I'm learning every day, but I enjoy doing it. So I'm constantly learning. We're, you know, Dad's always on my brother and I about doing it right and going at it the right way. And, you know, you got to put your time in, because if you, no matter what you do, if you only go at it 50%, you're not, if even it's conventional, right. You got to, it ain't going to work out for you. So for everyone to go organic, I don't think it makes sense for everybody, because not everybody financially needs to do it. Not everyone needs the headache. So if the robots come along and some people, younger farmers say, yeah, you know, I think I could benefit from that. Maybe I could get one of them and do a couple hundred acres or something, be more diversified. I could see something like that. But
that kind of leads into one of the questions I had penciled down was, what do you see the future of organics being?
A lot of people say it's a fad. I've heard a lot of people tell me, you know, when we were getting it, that's just a fad. That's not going to be here in 10 years. It's not going to be here. You know, you're wasting your time. I think it's going to keep growing because, you know, the younger generations they love the idea of, even though they don't really know where their food is coming from, they love the idea that it just says organic. Now, is it a marketing thing? I don't know. If it's a peace of mind, I guess it's peace of mind. And you can't really blame them sometimes. I mean, they see, you know, you turn on TV and it's sign up for this lawsuit, you know, against Roundup or Monsanto or something, you know, that's constantly getting thrown in their face. So people are eyeing up organic a lot more. Everyone's trying to be healthy. Now, do I eat all organic? Absolutely not. I mean, I got organic food in my house. We buy it. I feel, you know, we should be buying it. If we're producing it, we should be buying some of it, but I don't eat all organic. But I don't think it's going to, I don't think it's going anywhere. I think it's going to keep growing. I think organic farming is the original way to farm. I mean, the GMOs and all that stuff's new. So people kind of treat it like it's a new thing and it's going to kind of go away at some point.
So do you have like a integrated pest management program then? I see that as maybe one of the biggest things that conventional farming does that is genetically modified is maybe a way to keep the pests away. Do you have another program other than what you've said so far?
No, not really. I mean, really, knock on wood, our pest issues really aren't there. I have noticed if you keep the weeds down, and keep them brown down and keep them gone before you plant, you don't really have a pest issue when the plant's young. Where I have maybe had the most issue is if I have a neighbor cuts hay and his bugs will jump from his hay field over to my beans or my corn. I had that last year. So sometimes you have to really pay attention to where the neighbors are doing things. Maybe be prepared to go out and have to spray some corn for armyworm or something like that. So they're just kind of just got to pay attention. But luckily, I mean, the pesticide, knock on wood, like I said, hasn't been a real issue for us trying to handle them. So I'd be worried if – I'm not sure what a guy would do if you had a real, real issue or a couple hundreds of acres or been taken over. Because right. I don't know if there's anything that works fast enough.
Right.
So
yeah, that could sneak up on a guy. But when you mentioned neighbor – that triggered something in my mind. You know, you've obviously done quite a bit on Twitter, other social media platforms. You're what I'd consider an advocate for organic, at least sharing your story so people know what's real and what's right, what's not. How do you deal, or one, do you get any negative flack? And then how do you deal with that, the people that are maybe hating on the process or just trying to really get at you?
You know, I understand why people don't like it. I mean, it's... I don't really consider myself competition to the conventional side. We're supplying two different consumers, but I've had people pull in. I mean, people are pretty blunt about this sometimes. I've had people just tell me that that ain't going to work. Why are you wasting your time? It's not going to work for you. And then it's like, well, I guess, I mean, you're entitled to that opinion, but and then you get to always get the old, well, why do you have a sprayer? You can't have a sprayer. You got your typical organic farmer. You probably spray at night, this and that. So you always hear them kind of comments, but I don't know. It just kind of comes with the territory. It's not, I don't think organics are typically a popular topic again amongst a lot of farmers, but it works for me, and that's why we do it. It works for us, and we're going to keep doing it.
Well, we're going to make it a popular topic. We're putting it out there, out to our listeners. So at least they might have some questions to fire your way and whatnot. But as you guys have gone through this and gained some experience, what's the best thing you've done? What do you think is maybe one or two items that has contributed the most to the success of where you guys sit right now?
Just doing a good job. I mean, that's got us farther than anywhere. We've just really put in a lot of effort. Dad's been very good about just doing a good job. Try not to take off more than you can handle. You don't want to do too much of this and do a bad job at it. If you do a little bit at a time and slowly grow, you can keep up and you still do a good job and you'll be all right. But yeah, I mean, I'd say just the one major thing is just trying to do a good job at it. It's gotten us pretty far, and we really enjoy doing it. But it's also allowed us to, better our infrastructure as a farm, be able to put in tile and it's put up a grain setup and do some different things like that. It's really opened some doors there. So that's what we also like about it.
Nice. So let's flip it. What are some things our listeners should avoid doing? What are some mistakes you've made that you can help us not make again?
Do not watch the neighbors. when the neighbors go to the field, you got to sit on your hands because you're not supposed to be playing. I mean, it's one thing if it's, there's always a neighbor wants to jump the gun and get going early. And you just got to tell yourself, it's too early for us. We got non-treated seed. You can't stick wet or seed non-treated seed in cold, wet ground. It will not work. And doesn't matter how many times you try it, it's not going to work. And then, the goal is to get the plant up before the weeds. Then you don't have to work so hard at it. I mean, you're on the right side of the ball. We've planted early before and it's come back and bit us. So that's what I tell, if you're eyeing this up, don't watch the neighbors. Do what you know is best for you. You got to farm for yourself. You can't be out there just to be the first one out and the first one done.
So you said you had some that didn't go crazy well because maybe you went too early. How does crop insurance work with organic? Is it you pay a higher premium? Can you get crop insurance?
Yeah, you can get crop insurance. So your established history you have when you're conventional, you get that build up, and it takes years to build that up. And that goes back to zero when you go to organic. So you have to build that back up, and you get you can still get, replant and stuff like that. That nothing's changed. It's just kind of a different ball game and getting going again.
So there's a lot of talk in Congress about, your carbon footprint and where all that's going, and bigger corporations that want to balance it. I was just in an airport the other day, and it said that we'll be carbon free or carbon neutral by 2024. And it made me think, well, how are they going to do that? So they're going to buy carbon credits from somebody. Do organic farms get bigger carbon credits? Do we know that yet? I know we interviewed somebody on carbon credits, but I don't remember talking about that, Tanner. Maybe you might get a larger credit.
Possibly. I've heard so many different things. I listened to the episode you guys did on that, and I've heard so many different things about that. I don't know what's right. I don't know what's wrong with it. So, I mean, maybe we'll see how things turn out. I don't know. That's a good question.
I could see speculating here is, that's for less tillage. That's for no-till, strip-till. If we're making multiple passes with a tillage, a cultivator, a rotary hoe, I almost wonder if it might be the flip side. Even though it's deemed organic, it might get less of a carbon credit per acre. But that'd be a good thing for us to keep our eye on as stuff continues to come out about it.
Yeah, I mean, and that's the thing, you know, and there's people that are they're doing some no-till organic, which I'm kind of, you know, I like to watch because I don't know how they get away with it some days. I fight, you know, the weeds are hard enough. You know, they plant rye, they let it get tall, they crimp it, they plant into it, and then they don't really have to do a whole lot. So that's kind of neat to watch and learn about that. So maybe it'd work. I don't know. I'm still learning the whole carbon credit thing. I'm still trying to wrap my head around how they're going to make all that work.
No, I think we learned a lot. We covered a lot. Tried to dig a little bit into the profitability side of this. Obviously, I think that's going to be something that each individual operator is going to have to look at, and probably depends so much on what you have for an end market, on what you can do with the crop once you get it. Do you think we missed anything, Adam?
No, not really. I think we've hit everything right on the head.
Well, Tanner, I tell you what, I'll summarize. You give a challenge today. And Adam, one thing we ask all our guests is what do the most profitable or most successful, rather, farmers have in common? So while I summarize, think of the answer to that question of what is the most common trait that successful farmers have. So to our listeners, today we talked about organic farming. We had Adam Bissell, Pleasant Valley Organic, St. Louis, Michigan. And talking with them, they have a whole host of acres that they're putting into organic, and he gave us a good insight on some of the crops that he used: field corn, soybeans, squash, which I was surprised about, beans, all different kinds of dry beans. And the big takeaway that I got from that was you need to have a local source for that to go somewhere to maybe be profitable, Tanner. It's not just growing the stuff. It's knowing that you have the outlet for it to go somewhere. So make sure that you're doing that. One of the other things that I thought was great is don't look at the neighbors. So as you're growing, they might go a little sooner, a little faster. You're eventually always going to be fighting the weeds throughout this process. A couple different ways to do it, maybe using rye, maybe management with flamethrowers, cover crops, cultivators, different means to an end there. But the goal is and not have any herbicides, pesticides on it, but still manage it in a organic way, if you will, the way that maybe our forefathers did when they started. So some of the biggest challenges that Adam's talked about is maybe having 60-foot equipment as they've upgraded. Some of the biggest challenges was maybe the financial obligation to make the transfer from conventional to organic. So that's something that you're going to want to watch for if you're thinking about doing this. And then some things to avoid, as I already said, don't look at your neighbors. And then things that are musts that you want to do is do a little research on it. And my must is make sure that you have an outlet for it. So nice. With that, did I miss anything there, Adam?
No, I think we hit it all.
All right. So what do you think, Adam? What do you think the most successful farmers all have in common?
The most successful ones that have everything in common are the ones that they know their operation. They're there to work. They're there putting the time in. They know where their break even is. And I feel like that's what it takes. You got to know where your break-even point is. You just got to be there to put the work in, and you'll be successful.
That's right. Money's made in the margins. Whether it's conventional or organic, the money is definitely made there. So my challenge for you listeners is probably different than what you're expecting. Is I'm not going to challenge you to go out there and try to become organic. I think what I'm going to challenge you to do is to start looking at what can diversify your farm. We're very blessed to have some good markets where we're at currently. Obviously, we're waiting on Mother Nature to help write the rest of the script for this season. But what better time to take advantage of a potential opportunity to diversify than those profitable years? So see if you can find a way to diversify. Maybe it's organic. Maybe, like Adam said, it's non-GMO. Or maybe it's just something else that you could get together with. But if you can diversify and maybe partner, I mean, I thought that was a really cool example to where they're supplying the feed to a poultry farm and getting manure back in a form of a contract there. So that could be another great way to help make sure that your farm diversifies itself on the input side. So that's my challenge. Let's find something that we can do in the next crop season that helps diversify more than where you're currently sitting. Listeners, we really thank you for listening. Don't forget about our partners, BW Fusion. They are focused on bringing innovative fertility, nutritional, and technology products to the ag marketplace. They combine their best-in-class products along with the 365 soil and tissue program to provide you as the grower the tools necessary to address the limiting factors in real time throughout the growing year. So that's another one of those technologies that's available, another tool in your toolbox. Don't forget to submit your questions and topic suggestions to us, farmforprofitllc@gmail.com. And before we sign off, Adam, if someone's got questions for you, what's the best way for them to get a hold of you? Maybe a Twitter handle or an email address?
My Twitter handle is MrBissell_917. I'm on Instagram, just Adam Bissell on Instagram. And that's normally where I'm at.
Awesome. Well, listeners, thanks for tuning in. Remember to like, rate, review, and share. And until next time, have a good one.
Remember, if you aren't farming for profit, you won't be farming for long.